Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Father Daniel, how are you, our intrepid traveler?
Hey, it's good to see you, Chris.
Where are you just back from?
Well, I was in Peru just a couple weeks ago, so that's the most recent visit. I was actually went down for a mission trip through Catholic World Mission. We're helping to build a Catholic school in the poorest part of Lima, Peru, which is where Pope Leo used to be bishop in the Diocese of Callao. So we're helping to build a school there, and I had to go in with one of the main benefactors and check out the construction project. So pretty cool.
And did you do anything fun while you were there?
I did. I actually got permission from my superior to go hiking in the mountains. So I flew up to Cusco, which is at 12,000 feet, and went up from there to the Salcantay Pass, which is 15,255 feet. Just majestic, glorious.
15,000? You're up at 50. You hiked to 15,000 feet?
Yeah, I
wow,
did.
That's
yeah,
way up there.
Up over a mountain pass.
That's way up there.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Cool. So, let's begin our show this week with something very topical.
Okay.
Pope Leo and AI, his encyclical.
Yeah,
have you had a chance to
read? I have started reading it. So, you know, it's
quite large.
Yeah, it's not a short document, so it does take some time to read. But I've been reading it for the last few days in spare moments and trying to catch up and see the insights from the Holy Father on AI.
So the encyclical is entitled Magnifica Humanitas, on safeguarding the human person in the time of artificial intelligence. So with AI as its entry point, Pope Leo articulates the church position on a range of issues, including wealth inequality and the erosion of democracy. He warned about new forms of slavery driven by the need for minerals in the tech supply chain and dehumanization caused by the growing supremacy of technology. He draws a distinction between human beings and machines, saying artificial intelligences do not undergo experiences, do not possess a body, do not feel joy or pain, do not mature through relationships, and do not know from within what love, work, friendship, or responsibility mean. The document warns that AI risks undermining what it means to be human. The Holy Father insists that every technological development be measured against a deeper question, that is, does this serve the common good? So when technology serves the common good, it can be viewed as an extension of the freedom God gives us in Genesis to till and keep the land. It frames AI as the new industrial revolution and calls on humanity to bring moral wisdom rooted in Catholic social teaching to bear on how it's deployed. So I don't want to tackle this whole document because
yeah,
we've already,
it's a lot. Mm-hmm.
Right, it's a very large document. So mm-hmm. I just want to kind of home in on parts of it. So the part I want to talk about first, or really the only part I want to talk about today, is him warning about what he calls the Babel syndrome,
mm-hmm.
worship of profit at the expense of the vulnerable, and the pretense that a single language, even a digital one, can translate everything, including the mystery of a person, into data and performance. So first, what about this notion of a single digital language? Have you contemplated on that?
No.
Yeah, so I don't see the objective of AI as trying to drive us into a single digital language, even if in fact that becomes a secondary effect of AI. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it's the objective.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a resulting symptom of mm-hmm. of what happens. So the church is teaching on Babel about pride and self-sufficiency, to achieve greatness through our own power rather than through the dependence on God. I have to be honest, I've thought about the Tower of Babel many times, and there's a lot of it that's sort of a mystery to me, but the project wasn't condemned because building or civilization is in itself bad, but because the motivation was self-glorification. You agree with that?
Yes. Well, in the number 7 in the document talks about this construct of the Tower of Babel versus the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem. Those are kind of the two images that the Pope uses in the document, which are very evocative. But he talks there in that number 7 about that they were seeking to guarantee stability and power for themselves, make a name for themselves. So it's like self-sufficiency. Independence from God, create a tower that is the product of our own making.
Okay,
that's
so how would a single language be working towards that end?
Well, I think you have to take a step back. I think you're taking single language maybe too literally, and I haven't reflected on this. As usual, Chris,
right.
we're just launching this topic, and I'm seeing it for the first time. I haven't had a lot of chance to reflect on it, but I don't think he's talking about the just once. Let's all just stop speaking Spanish and Ukrainian and Polish, and let's all speak English. That's not what he's saying. I think what he's saying is that it becomes only way of looking at the world, that everything is through a data-driven type of
and I like
mindset.
What you just said. I get that actually makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that there is probably a danger in that. Although again, I don't think that's the outward objective of AI.
It's the way that the large language models are built. They're built on evaluation of languages and on data sequences and statistics, and so that can lose the nuances of other really, really important aspects of human life, like love, emotions, the intuitions that are just unique to us as human beings. So you can kind of program the large language models to pick up on some of those things, but not with the nuance that the human brain can at this point.
All right, what about this prospect of, because it's mentioned in the document, and again, I haven't read the whole document either.
Right.
I kind of, parsed through it and read more deeply some of the parts that initially interested me, but this concept of the elimination of jobs, it'll be a byproduct of AI. So let's take, for example, accounting.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't bother me one iota to see the vast majority of accounting work migrated to AI to eliminate what I see as a tax upon a tax
mm-hmm.
in our economic structure. So you have to pay a tax on your labor output, and then you have to pay another tax to the person to figure out what the tax is.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a series of rules and exceptions to the rules.
And redundancies. Efficiency and make life more human.
It seems perfectly set up for something like AI to eliminate the need for accountants, at least for filing your own personal taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or other things like programmers. I mean, there were a lot of college graduations that went on recently, and there was one where a guy started giving the commencement speech, and he mentioned AI, and all the students started booing,
right?
Because they're seeing that their job prospects are diminished by
a couple of these commencement speeches.
Yeah, so there is an anti-AI sentiment in some quarters of society, because they do recognize it's changing the labor market.
It is akin to the Industrial Revolution.
Totally. Yeah.
So what's the difference between eliminating accounting jobs or software engineer mm-hmm. coding jobs and the elimination of backbreaking manual farm work with the introduction of the mechanical thresher?
Mm-hmm.
Or the elimination of drivers of horse-drawn wagons with the advent of the rail system?
Right.
Or telephone switch operators when they went to direct dialing? These were, yes, jobs that were lost, but people, they weren't meaningful jobs, okay? Now, I'm not saying that accounting's not meaningful.
Yeah,
so that's
meaningful. That's a
meaningful
human concept.
Meaningful in that they weren't challenging anybody's, you weren't born to be a switch operator,
right?
Now, I do understand that there's a certain personality type that really does well with taskmaster type of
mm-hmm,
things like accounting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it fits their personality really well. But
there will be other things in the future that might fit them better. And one of the things that I think, yes, there will be loss of certain jobs. There's no doubt about that. Every new technology which has come along has, it's caused some sort of shift in the labor market. So that's a given. The question is that inhuman, or are we denigrating human dignity by the loss of certain jobs? I think that's the deeper question.
And that's exactly where I want to go, is if we don't do it, somebody else will. Let's say we, meaning the United States,
right?
If we don't, China will. So
mm-hmm.
what I like to think about in this regard is it's not as though the underlying business is in any way immoral, like mm-hmm. say pornography.
Sure.
Pornography is already out there, so we should say, let's be the best at doing pornography.
It's morally
corrupt.
There's a moral problem with it. Yeah.
Right.
In the case of AI, it's morally neutral. because it's a tool. It can be used for good. It can be used for evil. And just like any other tool, you know, you don't denigrate an axe because someone used it to chop someone up in a brutal, you know, homicide. Okay. The tools need to be used by moral human beings. And I think that's the whole point of the document from the Holy Father. It's like, hey, wait a second. Let's not just be pulled along by these forces without thinking about it. You know, number six of the document I thought was really kind of the key to understand the entire document. Because the Holy Father says, we're living through a rapid phase of transition, which while some are vying for the future of new technologies and others dedicate themselves to reflecting on the matter, most people are just watching and waiting, observing from afar and merely hoping for the best. And in a certain sense, the Holy Father is saying, hey, no, we need to think about this. We need to talk about this. And we need to orient this human reality, this new development of technology, so that it truly is serving the common good and the good of humanity.
I imagine we'll be unpacking more about this document over the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, so much in it. It's really fascinating. And it is one of the key topics of our age right now.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. A taxpayer-funded, city-owned Texas water park has sparked backlash by organizing a Muslim-only day to celebrate the Islamic high holiday commemorating Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son. Epic Waters.
Where is this in Texas?
Grand Prairie, Texas.
Grand Prairie, okay.
So Epic Waters is the name of the park, and they drew backlash as they released flyers for the June 1st event, which would demand a modest dress code and serve only halal slaughtered meat.
Okay.
The suggested swimwear included full head-to-toe coverings with bathing suit material alongside full body coverings for children, and all swimwear must meet Muslim guidelines. The water park's website notes that men and women will not be separated during the event, but attendees are told to uphold Islamic etiquette by lowering their gaze throughout the day. This water park cost $88 million and was funded with taxpayer dollars in the form of a quarter-cent sales tax on city residents. The planned Muslim-only event at Epic Waters Indoor Water Park was subsequently canceled following threats from the Texas governor to withhold $530,000 in state funding. So some commentators have pointed out that any group can legally reserve a park for a closed private event, which is what this was.
Sure.
If, in fact, that's what happened, I don't have a problem with this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Gosh, there's so many different layers here. So from a strictly business standpoint, can any group come in and do a closed event? Yes. I think that there's also something positive in the modesty dress codes of Muslims, which I wish more women would take that to heart.
Particularly
and
teenage girls.
Well, not just teenage
girls.
Well,
some of the bathing suits that I see, I'm like, my gosh, really?
Yeah,
as a dad, I'm like, please, can you guys put something
totally
on?
But even guys. I mean, like, there was a guy out running this morning in, you know, short shorts and showing off his physique as he's running along the side of the road. It's like,
was that guy you?
Really? No, it wasn't me. that wouldn't be me. I think that we've lost a little bit sense of pudor, as the Latin word is. Pudor is the sense of, let me not lead others into temptation. And that's for both men and women. I think we could regain some of that in Christian culture.
All right, so but you have a closed event, a closed park.
Yeah, so I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with the modesty. What I think might be a little bit more of an issue is the issue of assimilation into the culture. Because one of the things that we've been known as, you know, a nation, is that we are a melting pot. And so people that have come, they assimilate, they become part of the culture, they embrace the American way of life, which is historically meant also a Christian worldview. I think it's a bit naive for us as a culture to think that we can just have all of these cultures which are maintaining a completely separate identity and not adopting some elements of
American
culture.
All right, but
American
see,
culture.
I've been to a place, I've been up to a resort in Vermont that was entirely rented out by some Orthodox Hasidic Jews for the 1 or 2 week period. The reason they rented it out was because it had no air conditioning.
Mm.
There was no mechanical allowance for things like air conditioning. In fact, while I was there, we were there for the day mountain biking, I was asking what the smell was, and they can't flush the toilet.
Oh, so really?
Yes, they can't even flush the toilet.
Oh, my gosh.
So
that's too much information there.
Yes, but my point is, I don't have a problem if they rented this whole place out.
Right.
And we are a Judeo-Christian nation, and these Hasidic Jews,
but what percentage of the population are Jews?
Well, a large, if you count Christians, because we're all
3 or 4%.
Right, but we all have the Jewish heritage in our Christian.
Yes, in some ways,
background.
But I would even this is personal pet peeve of mine. I've heard that so many times over the years that I've been but I've started to question that in more recent years. Historically. Yes, there's some Jewish influence in our culture, and obviously Christianity is a fulfillment of Judaism, and I have a greatest esteem for our elder brothers in the faith. But at the same time, is it really legitimate to say that we have a Judeo-Christian culture when very few Jewish people have been involved in the setting of the founding fathers, the founding documents of the United States? I would say that the Judeo influence in our culture has been much more prevalent through Hollywood and through banking and some of the other sectors that Jewish people have been very much involved with.
I'm speaking more broadly Judeo-Christian, in that all Christians are influenced by Judaism because of the fact that we are Christians and the, as you say, fulfillment of...
We are. And some of that influence is positive, and some of it can be negative. I mean, we could get into all kinds of interesting conversations.
Yeah, let's get back to the question here. So yeah. the fact that they let this water park be rented out for a private event means that you're going to have things that you don't, that not everybody necessarily agrees with, but it's a private event. I really don't have a problem. If it were a Christian day at the park where they were asking folks to do things that were more in line with the Christian worldview, again, it's a private event. If you don't want the place to be rented out, then don't make it available to be rented out.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that principle, but I think that then when you look at the bigger perspective, what's happening in Texas with the arrival of some of these Muslim communities? What happened in Dearborn, Michigan? What's happened with the Somali Muslim community in Minnesota? So there's bigger picture elements that are taking place, and I think this is perhaps where the governor of the state intervened, because what I've heard anecdotally, and I would have to research this a little bit more, I've heard that there are Muslims from around the United States which are flocking to Texas because they're creating their communities and enclaves there, similar to what has happened in Dearborn, Michigan, to the point that in Dearborn now they have Sharia law in place in many places. I don't think that that's healthy for a Western society to have Sharia law.
Neither, but I would say don't make the place available to be rented out then. If you don't want the...
So to make it across the board.
Across the board.
No, right.
Either it's available or it's not.
Yeah.
And if it is available, then if these folks want to do this the way that they want to do it, then fine.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a legitimate solution, but it doesn't address the broader question of assimilation within a society.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. For decades, the scientific view was that human evolution essentially stopped 50,000 years ago. Scientists had argued humans had escaped natural selection, that culture, medicine, and technology had replaced genetic adaptation as our primary means of survival. Then scientists sequenced the human genome, and that view collapsed. In a 2009 book called The 10,000-Year Explosion, it argued that human evolution has accelerated in the past 10,000 years, running 100 times faster than its long-term average over the past 6 million years.
Mm.
Researchers analyzed DNA from 270 individuals and found that evolution has accelerated in roughly 1,800 human genes, encompassing about 7% of the human genome. Most of the mutations resulted from dramatic population booms. As populations expand, the number of beneficial mutations increases and can sweep more quickly through a population. Concrete examples of recent evolution are lactose tolerance. As dairy farming spread, populations in Europe and parts of Africa evolved the ability to digest milk into adulthood, while a lot of Asians cannot do that.
Hmm.
disease resistance. In sub-Saharan Africa, women carrying a certain variant of a gene called FLT1 are slightly more likely to carry pregnancies to full term during malaria season. Diet adaptation, so descendants of farmers, are much more likely to have enhanced production of salivary enzymes that break down starches. So these are all evolutionary genome.
Very interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So in the last 10,000 years. So the Catholic Church does not, as you know, reject evolutionary science. Pope Pius XII in 1950 opened the door by allowing that evolution could be studied as a legitimate scientific question. Then in 1996, Pope John Paul II went further, declaring that evolution was more than a hypothesis and consistent with Catholic faith. So the Church accepts that human bodies...
Well, I would distinguish it can be consistent with Catholic faith as long as it's not an atheistic view of evolution.
Well, lactose tolerance being an example.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and the way the Catholic Church understands that is that God can work through any mechanism he wants in order to carry out the development of the human species. And so if he works through the mechanism of evolution, there's nothing incompatible with faith.
Right.
So we should look at the scientific evidence here.
Right. So I was just about to say, right, you just said it already, that the Church holds that or accepts that human bodies evolve, but holds that human spiritual nature, the soul, reason, conscience, and moral capacity reflect a special divine act.
Intervention, right. Yes.
So the Church insists that the human soul is directly created by God and cannot be the product of purely material processes, and it cannot evolve. So this is where I think it's interesting in this article that I read. So Charles Darwin argued that moral sentiments like sympathy, loyalty, and fairness evolved because they aided group survival. Creatures that cooperated outlasted those that didn't, so conscience, in his view, has biological roots. And then Friedrich Nietzsche argued that what we call good and evil is not eternal truth but a historical product, specifically that Christian morality represented a slave revolt in which the weak reframed their weaknesses as virtue. So morality for Nietzsche has a history and changes with the power structures. So what are your thoughts about this bifurcation of physical and spiritual evolution?
Yeah, I think that they got on very spurious ground when they start making affirmations about elements of philosophy and morality. Stick to the science, dudes. Their specialty is not in that branch of science, and I think they made some affirmations which are grossly inaccurate and false. So I think when you start to look at the evidence, there are elements that from history and from how populations interact that will influence how we live out morality over time.
Right. Take, for example, marriage and having more than one wife. I mean, in some of the Old Testament...
Sure.
Accepted practices, right? There was the concubines.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't take away an underlying moral, natural law that exists and gives us principles for adjusting to everything that's going on around us in the world. And this is the richness of Catholic moral teaching that goes much deeper than some superficial application of evolutionary psychology to the realm of morality. It's just a little off base.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires.
Continuing a recent trend, the Wall Street Journal reports Gen Z is flocking to Catholic Mass for community, faith, and dates. For years, churches were worried about empty pews. Now at St. Joseph's Church in Greenwich Village, they're worried there isn't enough room. At a recent 6 p.m. Sunday Mass, it felt like a sold-out event. Every inch of pew space was filled with young adults. Latecomers squeezed into rows of plastic folding chairs or stood shoulder to shoulder in the foyer, peering through the glass doors. Two 20-something parishioners of St. Joseph's started a pre-Mass meetup called Pizza to Pews at a pizzeria near the church. More than 100 young adults showed up the first week. By the third, it was 200 young adults, some coming all the way from Boston by train to go to this Mass.
Wow.
It's a measurable trend that Gen Z Christians attend church more often than millennials, Gen X, and baby boomers, according to the Barna Group, a firm that studies U.S. faith trends. Many young people began searching for community after COVID, while some parishes saw a surge after the killing of Charlie Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
You're always meeting new people, but you're lonely, says one young lady who moved to New York City 2 years ago. She recently started hosting what she calls a Holy Girl Walk, a Catholic play on the Hot Girl Walk trend, where young women pray the rosary in Central Park. Her first event drew about 50 women, and the second has more than 150 signups after a video went viral. So what I want to go and ask you about here is, just like participating in a seemingly minor deviant activity without intending to go any further down the wrong path can lead to unintended consequences and destinations, likewise, attending church for less than entirely spiritual reasons, like, say, trying to, you know, find a date, I think is still a great thing, as you might end up down the road doing something you never intended, and you could end up a saint. What do you think?
God works in so many different ways to bring us closer to Him, and I totally agree. You know, people may not have the purest motives at the beginning, may not have even the strongest faith, but if they start attending, they start getting that good influence in their lives, it can lead to a deeper faith. It can lead to a deeper relationship.
Yeah, so there's no problem with pizza being the primary attractant.
No. No, and then there's other places where you got theology on tap, where people are going for some good beer and getting a spiritual message. So this is just part of human nature. You know, we have different elements that draw us in, and God will bring us closer to Him through that.
The medical community is divided, but some are touting the miraculous effects of acupuncture on dogs and cats.
Interesting.
The Wall Street Journal chronicles a veterinarian who began her career in the conventional way but got interested in Eastern medicine and went eventually to a Florida-based school called University that trains vets in traditional Chinese medicine. She charges up to $500 for house calls to stick needles in cats and dogs and has a wait list of clients. So the Catechism affirms that animals are God's creatures and that men owe them kindness, and that it is contrary to human dignity to cause animals to suffer or die needlessly. So the church is genuinely pro-care for animals, but within an hierarchy of values. The church doesn't say you can't spend significantly on pet medical care, but it does say you must keep human needs in proper priority. So spending $15,000 on a pet surgery while neglecting your charitable obligations would definitely raise moral questions, but acupuncture for pets, I think, is ridiculous. What do you think?
Oh, gosh. Well, unless it's cats. You know, stick pins in cats, I think you'd be happy with that, Chris. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's an interesting thought, and I think it goes back to the key principle that you brought out. Is caring for this animal as important as caring for the poor, caring for those in need around us, caring for our charitable obligations? And I think that's the key thing we should be looking at.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crosswires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens. On AM 1160, The Quest.